Welcome to the Nation's Blind Podcast, presented by the National Federation of the Blind, the transformative membership and advocacy organization of blind Americans. Live the life you want.
Hello, and welcome once again to the Nation's Blind Podcast. I am still Melissa Riccobono, and I am still here with my wonderful, amazing, never duplicated co-host, Anil Lewis. How are you?
I love that. I just like recording the podcast just to get introduced by Melissa Riccobono.
often imitated, never duplicated. That's what I was trying to say. And that is very, very true, because people do try to imitate you, Anil. I hope you know that. You know, I
poor,
guess that's kind of
them.
Well, you know, they look up to you. You know, you're a leader, and you know, what do they say? The biggest form of flattery is
imitation
or whatever. Yeah. And you also often kind of joke about or imitate people that you like, and a lot of people like you. So I think it's all good.
Wow. All right. Yeah. That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us at the Nation's Blind Podcast. Our episode has been about praise on Anil Lewis. So hopefully this was helpful to our listeners.
Always, always helpful to praise Anil Lewis. Yes.
talking about it being imitated. I think that a lot of individuals, unfortunately, when they're coming into the organization, they feel like they have to imitate someone else rather than becoming their authentic selves. Because I do think it's flattering if someone adopts a strategy or something, but I really, really try to strive to get people to feel comfortable in the movement based on their authentic place. Because if we all just imitated one person, we would be such a boring organization. I think the diversity and the different lived experiences and the strategies that we use to deal with the life's challenges really are what makes this organization so robust. To that end, I was very pleased to be able to facilitate a panel at our national convention this year with three really impressive young people. Manahil, Jean, and Kinchuk have really always impressed me since I've known them. They're student leaders in the organization that are transitioning into leaders outside of like our National Association of Blind Students. And the discussion was really around how do they find their way of maintaining their authenticity as they transition from student leaders to leaders in the broader movement. So I'm glad to have that particular discussion today, and very pleased that we're joined with Norma Crosby. Norma is our affiliate president and Texas, and also serves as the treasurer of our national organization for our national board of directors, and has so many other attributes with respect to her leadership in the organization. So, Norma, will you take a little time and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. Anil already told you a little bit about me, but I guess one thing that I would say about myself is when I joined the Federation back in 1982, which was a few days ago.
just a few.
I was not looking for what I found. I was a newly divorced young person with two small children, and I was fairly lonely and was looking for a social outlet. And I definitely found that. I have found hundreds of friends over the years in the Federation. They're definitely my people, my community. But I found so much more. I came and I met leaders who were willing to talk to me, just this little girl from East Texas who didn't think she had anything going for herself. But they talked to me, and they made me feel welcome. They made me feel that I was a part of something that I had never felt that before. I wasn't quite part of the sighted community, and the blindness professionals kept telling me I wasn't really exactly part of the blindness community either. And the Federation taught me that I did have a community and that I belonged, as I've said before, any place I want to go. And I started working in the Federation and found a passion for doing whatever needed to be done. People often want to know how does a person become a leader? And one of the things I always say is by doing any job that comes along.
Mm. Can you expound on that a little more? How did you become a leader?
Sure. At the time when I came into the Federation, we had a young man who was our affiliate president named Glenn Crosby. And
What do you know?
There is a familial connection.
So you really did get engaged in this organization in really social did. Fashion.
I used to come to Glenn with all kinds of ideas because I was young and I was enthusiastic about the work that we had to do once I actually got involved. And so I would just come to him with all kinds of ideas. And really the way I became a leader is he would say, you know, if I hope you're not just looking for work for me to do, because I already have a lot of work to do. And I said, oh no, I'm willing to do it. And really, you know, as I said, I think being willing to take on jobs that if you think something's a good idea, being willing to work on it is, in my opinion, what you should be willing to do. You shouldn't find jobs for other leaders because, as Glenn told me, he already had plenty of jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I definitely think being willing to take on those jobs that are not glamorous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've helped make protest signs in the middle of the night when nobody was looking, you know. And I think it's great to be the leader that's standing before the convention and hearing the thanks and the praise, but it's just as important to do those jobs behind the scenes that nobody really wants to do. And Dr. Jernigan taught us when I was growing up in the Federation, so to speak, he taught us that there's no job that's a leader shouldn't be willing to do. You shouldn't ask other people to do what you're not willing to do.
Yeah. And I think that's a real true leadership growth, regardless of, you know, not just within this organization, because when you have an understanding of the various jobs that need to be done and the challenges that people face in doing them, then you can be a leader because you can help support individuals who are going through that. And I think a lot of individuals don't really know what it takes, and they may be assigning someone a task and not really realize that it's a little bit more than just what they think. So having that lived experience as a leader, that's very similar to me. When I came as a part of the organization, my acceptance in the organization wasn't as good as you. I didn't have someone that I could latch on to. But I realized just through my relationship with Dr. Maurer and others, you know, the potential of what the affiliate could be here in Georgia, and a lot of the things I was coming to introduce, they weren't well received. And in the beginning, I have to own that I wasn't really doing it in a way that I think would have been received even by me as a leader. So I had to really reframe the way that I introduced myself as a resource to the organization. But then in doing those jobs, especially the ones that no one else wanted to do, and doing them well, you know, and making them look easy, then people started to notice me and the work that I was doing. And I wanted to be a leader. And I think that's an also important part of becoming a leader in the organization. So willing to do the work, wanting the work, because it seems, you know, if you're doing it well, if you're a leader and you're doing it well, everybody out on the outside thinks it's simple, but it's really not. I've learned more leadership skills being a volunteer in this organization in those early years than any other job I've ever had or any other formal training that I've had about leadership. So that's one of those opportunities, if you look at them, that you can gain by becoming a leader in the organization. How about you, Melissa?
Well, I have to say a couple of things. First of all, I think there's all kinds of leaders, because I'm mm-hmm. the type of leader, and I mean, I've definitely been out front, but that wasn't really the plan when I first joined the organization. I joined and I really got engaged in this organization a little bit like Norma, because, you know, back in the day, there was this Wisconsin Association of Blind Students president named Mark Riccobono, who had me come to my first student meeting. And the reason I joined the student meeting was because they were talking about things I cared about and things I was interested in helping with. Things like brailing names at a fundraiser and talking to kids and adults about braille at a bookstore. Mm. Things like buying a kid a cane whose family could not afford one. And that's what brought me in. And not only did that bring me in, but then just realizing that so often in other organizations, there's jobs, and when you offer to do it, oh, no, no, somebody else will take care of that. Somebody else will take care of that. And, you know, we were just a small student division. And so it wasn't that way at all. It was, oh, if you want to do this, you go ahead and do that. And I'll do this. And, you know, we'll do it this way. And yeah, we'll buy candy bars and we'll have a party to label the bags. And we'll, you know, all those kind of student-y types of things. But I became president because the person who was going to be president, President Riccobono, was running for the president of Wisconsin, the affiliate. So he didn't want to be student president anymore. And he had somebody all lined up. And she, at the very last minute, said, oh, no, thanks, but no thanks. And so we were really in a pickle. And a friend of mine was nominated, and she said, heck no. And maybe even stronger than that, but, you know, she was polite about it. And then I was nominated. And I mean, my gosh, talk about being on the hot seat. I mean, I was very new to the Federation. Might have been happy to be like the secretary or something, because I am more comfortable as a leader who is doing those things behind the scenes. Those things like organizing registration, taking people's names, taking people's money, you know, greeting them when they walk in the door, connecting them, you know, introducing them to people like that. I'm very comfortable with those things. I didn't really know what it would be like to be the president of something. And yet here we were, and it didn't really seem like anybody else was budging. And I kind of liked this Mark Riccobono guy, and I felt bad for him that this other lady had completely all of a sudden turned him down. And my friend just kept saying to me, I'll help you. I'll help you. I promise. I'll be your vice president. I promise I'll help you. And so I finally said yes. And there was a huge sigh of relief, including from the national rep at the time, who was Bruce Gardner. And that was how I got my first leadership. And it's been interesting because I've kind of, I don't want to have people take this wrong, but I kind of have fallen into leadership positions by happenstance kind of ever since. I've always wanted what I've gotten, but I never really thought about it until it was kind of in my lap, until I was asked, you know. So the president of our Dane County chapter moved away and he asked me to be president. I never thought about that, but I mean, it made sense. Okay, I could see it. Sure, I suppose. Then our president of our Greater Baltimore chapter moved away.
I see your strategy.
I don't know what
here.
I do.
I see. Yeah.
You know, then Dr. Maurer asked me to be president of Maryland. I mean, it's been very interesting, but it really has sort of come down to being given the opportunities. But also, I really want to make sure that people understand when we're talking about leadership, you don't have to be president, vice president. We always say there is plenty of work to go around in the NFB, and that is absolutely true. And if you are a leader that is much more comfortable behind the scenes, there's plenty of that work for you to do, and you are no more or less important than anybody else that is, you know, in front of the scenes, because you're often kind of the gears that are making something work and making it look really easy. And you got to have a team as a leader. And you know, we need all kinds. We need those that are really comfortable being forceful and out in front. And we really need those that are comfortable behind the scenes too.
So. Yeah, I agree. And you've had the experience that we're going to be talking about today, growing up as a student leader in the organization and still finding a way to still be part of the overall organization once you're no longer a student. Yeah. Again, the panel convention with Manahil Jaffrey and Gene Kim and Ken Chiktella was really, you know, an eye-opening opportunity for me to really get insight as to their, I guess you'll call it, transitional dilemma. And I'm looking forward to hearing some of the clips and us discussing them. But let's take a brief pause for a quick message and we'll come back.
Are you considering an end-of-year contribution? Now is the time. Thanks to a challenge grant from Humanware, during October, November, and December, you can double your dollars and help blind people to choose the lives they want. Celebrate by visiting nfb.org/donate, or you can call 410-659-9314, extension 2430. All right, we're back. Convention, you know, Norma, you talked about Texas. Convention will be coming up in Austin, Texas, before we know it. But let's now take a listen back to last year's convention. And Anil, your panel that you were able to help run, facilitate. And let's hear a little bit. I think we're going to hear some clips and then comment on them. That's how this is going to work, right?
Yeah,
Anil?
I'm going to take All a right. listen to a comment from Kinchuk first.
Perfect.
Getting involved with the NFB at a local level was so much easier. You know, having the collaboration between the student efforts and our very important affiliate and local efforts was really incredibly important. In my personal development, despite being involved locally, the leadership in Ohio really did take the time to invest in my success nationally. A month into my involvement in the NFB, President Richard Payne gave me a really unexpected phone call. I was on campus walking home from the gym on a snowy, wintry December day in Ohio, and he gave me a phone call and he said, hey Kinchuk, do you want to come to DC with me and represent the NFB, talking to congressmen, advocating for policy that's relevant to all of us? And I thought he was crazy. I didn't expect him to. I was like, what can I offer you, right? That's kind of the question I asked myself. But he saw a need and a place for young voices, and he invested the affiliate's resources into me. And that single trip to DC was incredibly pivotal to my development as a leader. And ever since then, the transition out of being in school and graduating over the past year and a half or so, and transitioning into other kinds of work in the organization, especially through the scholarship programs, has been incredibly easy and seamless and positive.
Yeah, that I think is the model. It's really nice that Kinchuk was able to engage in all three levels, right, as a student. In our NABS division, active in its local affiliate through the encouragement of his affiliate president, Richard Payne, who also encouraged him to get involved on a national level through that work. That's kind of ideal. Do either of you have any ideas of any successful transition opportunities similar to Kinchuk's?
I think, you know, sometimes students aren't involved as they might be because they're busy with school or their social life or whatever. And sometimes they're not involved because we don't help make them involved.
Mm.
I think it's critical that students be involved in every aspect of what we do in the Federation, because not only do they need us, but we need them too. We've got to find the next Mark Riccobono, the next Anil Lewis, the next, you know, whatever we need. And we're not going to find that if the only people we ever involve is the same people that have been involved for 100 years. We need those people too. But it's critical to hear those young voices as well, I think, and to invest the dollars and the time that it takes. And I think also to treat them like adults. I think very often, some affiliate presidents tend to go by the model, we never have done it that way, so we're not going to do it that way now. And young people want to do things different sometimes. And while you can't say yes to everything, I think saying yes whenever you possibly can is the thing to do.
Well said.
I think that's so, so smart. And I think also just being okay with letting young people take the lead and standing back and letting them fail, letting them make those mistakes. Now, if they fail, is something necessarily a failure? Well, no. I'll give you a quick example. This is with younger kids, but in our Bell Academy a few years ago, we had a Bell X program. This was for kids that were a little bit older, still of Bell age, but they were more like the 10, 11, 12-year-old ages. They knew the Braille code. They were ready for different kinds of challenges and not just, you know, Braille Twister and learning the basics of Braille. And so we had sort of an accelerated program where they did things like walk over to my house and make lunch for everybody in the program. And one of the girls still remembers this. She talked to me the other day about making pizza in my kitchen and how she remembered that and how fun that was. And they did all sorts of things. One thing they did was a play. And I was the director of said play and kept telling them, you know, guys, you really need to practice this play. These were young kids. They were, again, 10, 11, 12. They all were, most of them were very, very strong personalities. And the couple that weren't just sort of sat back and let the other louder ones take over. It was a very interesting dynamic. But let's just say they goofed around more than they practiced. And I said, okay. So it came to the performance. And, you know, the wheels kind of fell off a little bit. And I could have taken it two ways, you know, as a, you know, director of the play, I could have said, oh, this was horrible. You guys messed this up. You know, I've never been so embarrassed. But I decided very early on, you know what? This is their play. This isn't about me. This is about them. And wouldn't you know it that every single one of them at some point that day after the play came up to me in private and said, you know what? You were right. We should have practiced more. I said, okay, cool. Now you know for next time. But I think sometimes state presidents get so caught up and they're so busy and they want everything to run just right that they don't really give students sort of that opportunity to really truly take control without feeling like that person's looking over their shoulder. And that's very difficult to do. But I think when it can be done, it's important.
Sure. And I think that's important. Going back to what Norm was saying, you know, believing in them and supporting them. And I think that's important. And what you're saying is create opportunities for them to learn in that space too. When I was the Georgia affiliate president, we didn't have a huge student presence. But then when we started seeing these nice student leaders with all this potential, it wasn't about creating a space for them to just be up front and then we backfield to make them look good. We really trusted in them and supported them to develop, you know, programming that really spoke to where they were as students and what they felt was important. And we guided them to make sure that it was within a framework that was supportive of the Federation. And I think that's what made all the difference. I've seen subsequently many times when we've kind of, I'll say, anointed, you know, a young person with this particular, I don't want to call it false, but unachieved status. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's been detrimental. Like we'll tell, oh, wow, you're going to be the next president of the affiliate, you know, mm-hmm. because we like them. And that sets up a false expectation without leading them through a path that they acquire a skill set where they can be, you know, successful in that role. Because there is a true chance, you know, based on your description, Melissa, that they could end up becoming an affiliate president, you know, by some de facto absence of other candidates. And without them having a real sense of their skill set, who they are, what they bring to the table, we do them a disservice and the organization a disservice. But we talked about the ideal, right? And Kensha kind of modeled the ideal. Melissa, in many ways, it seems like your transition from a student leader to the leader was more ideal. But, you know, Manahil really took the opportunity to be vulnerable at the convention to share her experience, you know, coming out of that student leadership role, trying to be part of the affiliate, and hers wasn't as smooth as the one that Kenchuk described. Let's take a listen.
At that time, with the previous administration in my affiliate, I felt very unwelcome in that space. I would try to reach out multiple times to ask of how is it that I could get involved, to no answer, to a lack of enthusiasm. Again, I was very new, not only to the organization, but to the organization's philosophy as well. So maybe I didn't always say the right things, and maybe I didn't always know exactly how the structure worked, but I really needed someone in that moment to teach me and help me figure out what exactly it is for me to do and how exactly this organization does function. People thinking I was either not wanting to be involved in the affiliate or being too busy to be involved in the affiliate that really, unfortunately, turned me away from trying to be involved in my affiliate. And that is, again, I'm saying all of this to, a lot of this had to do with the former administration and former leadership administration, but a big thing that I want to emphasize here is that it's really important for individuals and affiliates to communicate with their students, because the assumption was already made that I didn't have time for my affiliates. I was not asked, or not even if when I reached out to ask to help with various parts, whether that be Washington seminar, state convention, my pleas were ignored because the assumption that I was too busy.
Yeah, I remember leading up to the panel, Manahil really struggled with, you know, what she should say on the national stage. And I think that took a lot of courage for her to be that vulnerable. But the real proof is in the pudding, right? Because as a result of her, you know, sharing on that level, I got a lot of phone calls from students, you know, and interestingly enough, some adults, that her story kind of resonated with them. And I think that the resulting discussion in the panel kind of encouraged them. And by those students sharing the strategies they use to continue to be involved, hopefully encouraged and inspired and guided some of the others who were dealing with a similar struggle. Norma, what thoughts do you have?
I think a lot of young people experience what she did. I don't think it's as uncommon as we wish it were.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I've started, you know, you learn as you go. If you're a president, you aren't born into it where you know everything the day you take over, right?
Absolutely not.
If only.
Yeah.
If only. Yeah.
I've been serving for 11 years now as affiliate president. And one of the things I've started really doing is to making sure that I include students on committees.
Mm.
One of our committees, our DEI committee, has several young people included, because that's one of the things they're passionate about inclusion and making everyone feel welcome. And they, not me, but they have come up with the idea that we should, as young people, do an adopt-a-grandparent
program. Oh, nice.
So
I love that.
That's something we're going to start working on here in Texas. And, you know, but it's so easy to say no. And I think that's the mistake we as older people do, you know, because maybe we don't have the energy anymore,
mm-hmm.
or not always, at least. We think, well, I can't take on one more task. But giving them that permission, they do have the energy. And I know when I was a young person, I was very passionate about what it was that we were doing and trying to achieve. And I was looking for things to do. And I think, you know, obviously there are students who would say they're too busy, but I think Manahil showed us that, you know, that's exactly why you do want to include them. You don't know how busy a person is until you give them the opportunity. And, you know, there is an old saying, if you want something done, find a busy person and ask them to do it.
I have to remember that one. I did find it very interesting that Manahil was interpreting, and it probably was true, the leadership saying that they didn't feel she had enough time, which I could see how that could be interpreted. That was interesting. How about you, Melissa? Any thoughts?
I think it's so complicated. So I love the idea that, Norma, you're putting these young people on the committees, you're giving them jobs. Sometimes as a state president, what I struggled with then was, okay, I've got all these people who are doing all these things over here, and how do I make it a point to be able to check in with them? Or if I can't check in with them, who can check in with them? You know, is that a board position? Like, okay, my such and such, my first vice president or whatever, is really passionate about young people. So maybe is that the person that I'm going to have check in? Because I think sometimes what can happen with students, you know, they have lots of energy, they have lots of ideas, and once in a while, unfortunately, the real world comes crashing down and they sometimes realize, oh my gosh, I'm overcommitted, or this is too big. And so it sometimes is hard to sort of, you know, you don't want to take away that enthusiasm. You want to give them jobs. You want to give them opportunities. You also kind of want to be that small voice of reason gently, and maybe even just setting your expectations, you know, okay, it would be great if you could get this adopt-a-grandparent running statewide by whatever day. But you know what? Honestly, if you get, I don't know, 5 people matched in your local chapter, that's a win. Like, that's going forward. So I think helping to kind of break it down, because a lot of students, you know, sometimes they have a lot of energy and a lot of will, but also really have not had the experience. I mean, I think it depends so much on how much support different students are going to need to get the same job done. But I do think it's very important to make sure that we're not just discounting students and saying, oh, they're too busy, or the last mm-hmm. 3 times I called them, they said they would and then they never followed through. Why didn't they follow through? It's probably not because they're bad people. You know, what can we do to make sure that doesn't happen again?
Yeah, that's what a learning takes.
And, place. You know, just because that happened once doesn't mean that you can't ever trust them. You know, I think that's really important too. I think sometimes we as humans are can be quick to judge and, oh, that person, they never, you know, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, you don't know unless you try. And maybe it hasn't been the right project or the right time or, I don't know, the right phase of the moon or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think it is all about planting seeds. And that's what students are doing, right? They're learning, they're growing, they're finding themselves. And I think sometimes they have to go away a little bit in order to come back stronger. Not always, but sometimes.
Yeah, and that's helpful. I've seen that a lot of instances. Go ahead, Norma.
I was going to say, I you know what? We're them too. I overcommit sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Me too.
I think it's important for them to understand that their leaders are humans too, and that it isn't the end of you if you make a mistake or if you overcommit, but you know, you try to do better next time.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I always tell people, everybody, my own kids, anybody I work with, you know, I would love it if you can follow through with every single thing you say you're going to do. But life happens. It gets in the way. Just don't disappear. If you communicate with me, if you are straightforward, and I don't even care if you don't want to share every single reason behind why. It's great if you do feel comfortable and you want to share, and I'm always here to help, especially if it's, you know, life stuff that's getting in the way that's really difficult and you need somebody to listen to that. But even if you can't bring yourself to share all the whys, the hardest thing for me is when somebody says they're going to do all this stuff and then what's the phrase now, I think, is ghost. You know, they ghost you. And they just disappear. And so I just tell people all the time, just don't disappear. Communicate. Just say, you know what? I thought I could do this. I can't. And then I know where I stand. Or I thought I could do all this. I can't do all of it, but I can do this piece of it. You know, and then you can move on. You can move on as long as you have information. If you have no information, that's where the problems really begin to creep up.
Sure. And the fundamental piece is, you know, holding them accountable, but recognizing that we need to support them toward that end. Just like Norma said, neither of us, well, no one comes to that with the skill set already in place. And what a great opportunity to create, you know, leaders by developing them, by giving them these opportunities, you know, to be heard and valued and appreciated and guided. So I think that's the crux of what we need to be doing in those particular spaces. Let's hear from Gene.
My story falls somewhere in between Kinshuk and Mono Hills, which is maybe why they put me in between them up here. So in 2019, I found the Federation as a national scholarship winner. And much like Kinshuk's first introduction to our movement, I was a very shy, socially anxious, and awkward 18-year-old who got shot straight into Las Vegas. But during this crazy week, Tim Elder and Jordan Castor from my California affiliate really made it a point to grab breakfast with me. Now, I was still nervous. It was a very fancy breakfast spot somewhere I was not used to going to. And I was so nervous that I didn't know what to pick. So I ended up picking a bagel and cream cheese at a fancy and a fancy breakfast place. And I was like, man, it's not a good first impression. But apparently that damage wasn't too bad because a few months later in October, Tim Elder called me and said, hey, I want you to come to this networking dinner we have going on. It's like 15 minutes from your place, and I think it will be a great time. What he didn't tell me, though, was that he was actually inviting me to an entire weekend of the California State Convention. So then through a series of accidental events, I ended up finding myself as the secretary of this thing called the California Association of Blind Students. And then I started doing student work. But the thing is, I noticed that the students, if I can be candid here, back then, this was about 6 years ago, were kind of off on our own doing our own thing. Right, Cricket Beidelman was the president at the time, and we simply just did our own student things, our own calls. We didn't have affiliate members showing up to our calls. You know, there's a chance that some of our affiliate leaders may not even have known when our calls were. And it's that miscommunication, that kind of siloing of our student activities, really basically gave me this perception that student division work was just student stuff, and we could not really participate, maybe we're not qualified enough or welcome to contribute to the affiliate work. So this led me to join the National Association of Blind Students to continue that student work to have a broader impact. So then again, I felt this choice, similar to what Manahala was talking about. And for me personally, I was very busy with school and other things, so I decided I can either help at the local level or I can help at the national level. And to an 18-year-old who is really excited and wants to make a big impact, when you say the word national, that sounds very flashy, right? So then I left the state work and then started doing national student work. And the last couple of short stories that I'll share is that an opportunity last year came to me to join the Kenneth Jernigan Leadership and Service Program, the inaugural cohort, yes. And for this program, you are supposed to ask two affiliate presidents to write you a letter of recommendation to serve as your mentors throughout the entire duration, the 1 year of the program. Now, I ended up asking the wonderful Jessica Beecham and Pam Allen, but you'll notice Tim Elder wasn't on that list. And it's not because I didn't have a great relationship with Tim Elder, but because I had been helping out with the national student work and interacting with Pam and Jessica, I felt more comfortable. I felt like I could relate to their stories a little bit more just with their personalities. And I felt really bad. At the national convention, I ran into Tim Elder in the presidential suite, and I felt really guilty. I felt a little weird, if I'm being honest. But he still treated me very warmly, and we had a very great conversation. And because he was seeing all of the great work I was doing at the national student level, he invited me to help out with other initiatives like the State Scholarship Committee on the state level. And that's the other thing, right? It takes time to build up that credibility, to establish that trust between affiliate leadership and student leadership, especially when students have limited time and are interested in other things and we're still maturing in a lot of ways. I'll share another story a little bit later in this panel. But Tim really took a shot on me, and because of that, I ended up getting more involved in the state community, getting to know our state affiliate leaders and handling different initiatives. And now I'm actually really sad to be leaving California to start my PhD in Massachusetts. I'm sure there'll be a great community there, but I feel like I'm just starting out in California, and now I'm going to be leaving. So thank you to Tim Elder for taking a shot on me.
That is such a powerful story, and that's exactly what I was trying to say before. That is exactly what happened to me. Our student division was very siloed. We didn't have a local chapter in the Madison area. And so we were sort of that local chapter slash student division all rolled into one. But because we were a student division, we didn't really make room for other people that weren't students. And so as soon as Mark became president in Wisconsin, he said, no, we need a chapter. This is our capital city. We need a chapter now again. And there's lots of adults that can be a part of this that aren't students, that are working age, and they need a place to go. And I was the same way. Well, why? What we've been doing fine. You know, we're just doing student things. Mm-hmm. And finally, I realized, oh, wait, it's all one big thing. We're all one federation. It's not just student stuff. we also are part of the bigger organization. And I think that's sometimes really hard for students and even sometimes local chapters to truly feel a part of that affiliate as a whole. Norma, I don't know what you do in Texas. You have a huge affiliate. What do you do to try to help people understand that they're not just little silos over here or over there, that you're all one big team?
Well, I'm not always successful at it, I'll say that. the students do tend to, you know, congregate together and stay away from us old folks and do their own thing. But one way, I used the example a few minutes ago about the work we're going to do to try to start an adopt-a-grandparent type program. And one of the things that we're going to do with that, that we've already started with that, is we have a senior group in Texas too. It's not a division. It's a group of seniors that get together every month. And Glenn oversees that. And so he's going to work with the DEI committee to kind of help with that whole silo nonsense. And, you know, they need the guidance, I think, from the seniors. And it also deals with generational differences. You know, it's generations working together to make this happen. It's not the seniors just overseeing the young folks, but it's them being there as a guidepost and being there to help them maneuver, to navigate what it is that they want to do, to help make, hopefully to help make them successful at doing what they want to accomplish. And I think intergenerational contact is really important. And the other thing, the thing that Jean said that struck me though, is local versus national. You know, some people get very, very much interested only in local issues and they don't realize what the bigger picture is. And then some people are just the, you know, just the opposite. And the fact is there is no national without the local and vice versa. So encourage, you know, one of the things that we do, we have a large at-large chapter in Texas. We have about 60 members of our at-large chapter. And one of the, I was the first president of that chapter. And one of the things that was a goal of mine at that time is to get them out of those rural communities, to get them to come to things like National Convention and Washington Seminar so that they understood what it is that the Federation's all about. And I think that's a goal for me with students, too, is to get them off their campus and get them involved in other activities as well.
Yeah, for those listeners who don't know, the at-large chapter is a chapter that's put together by many of the affiliates to help individuals who don't have an actual local physical chapter that they can attend to get involved in the organization on a local level. And I think it does a great job of creating an opportunity. And also, in many instances, it lets people know when there are individuals in their local neighborhoods that they end up can subsequently develop their own physical chapter. I have a different perspective. Well, I guess not different, but I guess it may be different. When people say silos, I don't necessarily think that it's a negative thing. I think silos are negative when that's all there is. I think that the students having that cluster of peer support, you know, a lot of people use the word clique. I don't think it's a bad word. I think it's a good word when you have a clique or a group of individuals that you can interact with. They just get problematic when they become exclusive. So no one else is able to be part of it, or also soul, meaning that's all that exists for those individuals. I love, like, our GABS, Georgia Association of Blind Students, very much a clique, very, very supportive of one another. I mean, even as adults now, they still have a very good relationship, but it wasn't exclusive. Any student who wanted to be part of that fun was welcome. So that was good. And then they also didn't just solely exist at a student organization. Many of them were active in national activity. So I think finding that group of individuals, I think that Melissa was saying earlier, you know, if you're going to be a leader, you got to have a team. Finding a group of individuals that you can count on and depend on is important, but not to the exclusion of being aware of the broader organization and without the exclusion of actually participating in the broader organization. So yeah, there was a lot in this discussion. What's interesting is all three of us have served as affiliate presidents. And I think that's why hopefully individuals listen to what we're saying here, because we're speaking from our lived experience of how to build this bridge between the students. But I really love that as part of the panel discussion, we also asked the students, you know, what is their responsibility for building this bridge? How can they take a more proactive role in making sure that as they transition from student leaders, that opportunities are afforded to them to be part of the national organization? So let's take a listen to their responses.
But to my students, I know you have 1,000 distractions on campus. I know it's hard and your schedules are so variable, but the growth and opportunity in this organization will carry you so far. And don't think that you have to get involved after you're out of school to be involved in your affiliate, because it starts now. And it's now that you have the opportunity to form the mentorships and connections and have the community around you that will carry you your whole life. Students, wherever you go in the country, I know you're always not gonna be in the same state for your career as you are where you grew up, where you went to school. In my personal experience, I've traveled all over the world, the country, and I've lived in different states, and each state I've been to, I've always felt so comfortable being by myself, because I know no matter where I go in this country, there's an affiliate, a chapter nearby, a community of Federationists that are here to support me. That's something that's a privilege to have.
For the students in the room, I really encourage you. I know it can be daunting to enter new spaces. Maybe people are older than you. Maybe people feel like people are more experienced than you. But there's a reason you're asked to be in this space. You belong here, you are valued, and you have a lot to offer. Oftentimes we say, oh, students are the leaders of tomorrow. Let's invest in our students for the next generation. That's great, but you're also here today. You can make that impact. You are the leaders of today. So ownership of that. Find different ways to get involved, and whether even it's a very small task, involved.
I would like everyone, all my new students in this room, to go to your affiliates and find a mentor. Okay, please, you know, I talked a little bit about my story, but as we mentioned, I know a lot of you whose first convention it is, who is at the NABS meeting, mentioned how awesome and exciting it is to get involved in NABS, and it is, and we would love you to get involved in NABS, but also do not underestimate the power that your affiliate has. Please go sit with your affiliate, find them during banquet, and there is so much that you can learn from them. And communication is the key to success. So please communicate and please see the power of
that. That is the key. And that's what we're all about, mentoring. So let's go build the National Federation of the Blind.
Wow, you even echoed a little bit there, Anil. That was like the voice of God almost.
That's Will. Will does that. Yeah, I need to give him a little bonus, a little Christmas bonus. Yeah, it's interesting as I listened to that. There was so much more that the students, but we only had such a limited amount of time. So in parts of it, it seemed like I was kind of rushing them along just so I didn't throw the agenda off altogether. Really quickly, before I get your thoughts, I just want to tell our listeners, now, if you want to go listen to the full presentation, you can go to nfb.org/conventions, and you can pull up not only this presentation, but presentations from previous conventions years past. But I do encourage you, if this topic is of interest to you, to go back and listen to the full recording, because there was a whole bunch of rich information shared. What are your thoughts, guys?
So I think one of the responsibilities students have is the concept of giving back. And, you know, I've been talking a lot this afternoon about intergenerational contact. And I think, you know, one of the things that I think students would actually appreciate is being asked to teach. Mm-hmm. You know, learning doesn't always come from, or teaching doesn't always come from the older member. Give them an opportunity to do and let them take on the responsibility of teaching, maybe whether it's technology, which they're so much more geared toward than some of our older folks, or whether it's cane travel, or whether it's just, helping someone who's not as far along in their journey as the blind student might be, giving them that responsibility and allowing them to grow by helping other people grow.
Mm.
I think that's so important. It can even go the other way. So Oriana has really found her passion by volunteering at our NFB Braille Enrichment for Literacy and Learning Academy, mm-hmm. and helping with childcare both now at state convention and at national convention, and now babysitting all around the neighborhood, and has just has this passion for helping kids, and is, and I'm not just saying it because I'm her mom, but she's really good at it. She is especially good at those little wiggly kids that can't sit still, because she used to be a really little wiggly kid that couldn't sit still. And she's really good with those kids who are blind with functional vision, because she was once a little kid that was blind who had functional vision. And like, you know, when am I blind? When am I not? Just kind of trying to figure that all out on her own and helping other kids figure it out. And then also, I guess, having parents then see her too as a blind young adult who is, I mean, young woman, not adult yet. Good Lord, I'm not ready for that. but a blind young woman who has confidence and who has skills and who is, you know, using those skills to help. I mean, all of that is really, really powerful. And so I love that idea of teaching and asking. And I would say to students too, you know, I think it's unfortunate, and we all do it. You know, we're all, you know, we're a people's movement, and we're all people. And so because we're people, we're not perfect beings. I think sometimes though, if you had one experience that didn't go quite the way you wanted it to, or you had one chapter meeting where it seemed like it was boring and you didn't know what you were getting out of it by sitting there, I think sometimes people are very quick to jump and say, I didn't feel welcome there. That's not for me. Instead of thinking about how it might be made even just a little bit better if, and then trying to make that if become a reality. Or, you know, giving it that 2, 3, 4 times of meetings and not just one, until you get comfortable, until you can find that mentor. It's hard in new spaces, right? Some people are very shy, and it's very difficult to kind of find your people. And I think some chapters are a little harder to kind of break into and find your people than others. Doesn't mean your people aren't there. It just means that you might need to work a little bit harder at finding them. Now, by all means, if you go 3 or 4 or 5 times and it you still don't feel welcome, you know, then I think it's really important to talk to your affiliate president about that or some other mentor in your affiliate, because if you're not feeling welcome, maybe there are other people that aren't as well. And, you know, one of our brands is being welcoming. And so maybe trying to find a different chapter or an at-large chapter, not just your student division, but, you know, other places where you can be a part of what's going on. But try not to be quick to judge, and try not to be quick to just say it's not for me if you really haven't given it a true try.
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else to add to that other than echoing the sentiment that all of the three students shared about, you know, taking personal responsibility to find a way to fit in. I think that one of the hardest parts about that is, one, there's an expectation that the leadership is going to find a way to use you, you know, as a resource, because they see you're so talented, which unfortunately sometimes that's not going to happen with leadership. And then two, what was similar to me, even though I wasn't a student, finding where you feel you could fit in, but then basically feeling like you're being rejected, you know, at every opportunity you kind of present that you can be helpful is being, you know, pushed aside. But I encourage people to try to find ways to fit in. And if you do feel like you're at a space where your value is not really appreciated, then I encourage individuals to go out and, again, find mentors. I know that it was said, go into your local affiliate and find a mentor. And if you're unsuccessful doing that, you know, the organization is bigger and broader than an affiliate. I know I would not have been prone to become a leader in the organization had I not developed a relationship with other individuals outside of Georgia at the time, because the dynamics here were just really frustrating. So I think, I guess I have more to say about this than I thought. I think the key for me, and hopefully for others, is to realize the real value of the organization beyond the personalities involved in the organization. And then recognizing that learning to interact with the various personalities is just a skill set you're going to have to adopt or learn and grow to be successful as a leader in the organization. But hands down, if you really look at the National Federation of the Blind for the systems change and the impact that it has on the lives of blind people, and you really have a heart and a mindset to be that change agent, to be, you know, that to have that impact, then there's no other place for you to be. And you have to just find a way, get in where you fit in. Just find a way that your talents and resources can be used to build the National Federation of the Blind, because we need each and every person to do so.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because sometimes, you know, there are personalities for whatever reason that you might not click with for mm-hmm. a million different reasons. So that's a really, really good point. Absolutely.
I was going to say, I think that doing what Manahil did is really important, and that is being vulnerable and being willing to say, hey, I'm not, to you, whether it's to your local chapter president or your affiliate president, I'm not feeling the love. I'm not feeling as welcome as I should, as I feel like I should. And sometimes having that conversation, I know I never intentionally would make someone feel unwelcome. That doesn't mean I've never done it.
Mm.
And so I think being able to talk with one another is incredibly important.
Yeah. As Manahil said, communication is the key. It's so important. You know, it's, and also, I mean, I would also just add, because you're a member of the National Federation of the Blind, there are so many people. I know if you, even if you're not in Texas, if you really liked what Norma had to say and you decided to call her tomorrow, Norma would be tickled pink to hear from you and so excited about talking to you. And if you really think that Anil is the person that you think that you're most like or whatever, and you talk to Anil or President Riccobono, oh, I can't call him, he's the president. Well, right, but he's your president. He's working for you. And I think sometimes people are so afraid to approach that they really miss opportunities. There's a young man that he's not super young. I guess he's older than I am. But anyway, there's a guy that I've been mentoring, and I kind of tell him all the time, talk to so-and-so. Well, why, you know, he doesn't know me. Doesn't have to know you. He's a staff member of the National Federation of the Blind. You're a member of the National Federation of the Blind. That's good enough. Call him up. And that is really, really true all the way across the board. And if you're not a phone person, then email. But don't feel like you can't reach out. You know, make those connections, because we're all human. We're all in this together. And like everybody has said, we truly do. And it sounds so cliche, but it is so true. We do need all of us, because all of us have something a little bit different to bring.
Sure. I just want to take a quick minute to level set expectations. To what Melissa was saying is very true. To me personally, and I'm sure shared by other leaders in the organization, we by no means ever want to feel like we're untouchable. But because we are out front, we end up getting a lot of individuals that are seeking to develop those relationships with us. And to be honest with you, sometimes the best thing I can do is refer you to someone else who I think has an ability to interact with you on a level that meets more of the things that you're interested in and has that time. I mean, I just recently attended the Pennsylvania State Convention. And again, you know, making myself available, talk to some members there. And then there are several people that called up after and said, oh, I would like, you know, to be able to work with you, and maybe you could mentor me. And if I was taking the responsibility of doing it with everyone who reached out to me, I wouldn't be able to do anything else. And I wouldn't even be able to meet that need. So I try to be very careful and tell them, you know, I want to be accessible for what you need within the bandwidth that I'm able to provide it. but I'm also going to make sure that I don't leave you just twisting in the wind. So when I refer you to a different individual or a different resource, it's not me being dismissive, it's me being responsive. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. It's not me not wanting to, it's me recognizing that I don't have the bandwidth, but I'm going to help you find someone who does. So I think that's what's important for people to understand, because there's so many people within this organization with hearts. And just because I'm in this leadership role doesn't mean that I'm even the premier or prime or proper person, you know, to be serving in that role for you. So if I can find someone who's going to be much more effective, it would behoove me to do that in the best interest of you, myself, and the organization. So
I love that. And I think students too, you know, if another younger student or even an older person comes to you as a student and says, I want or need this, that, or the other, it's important to have those boundaries. It's important to say, you know, I'd love to help you, but I really can't, but this person over here would be great. And yeah, I love that all the way around. So true.
Yeah. Yeah. And to that, I think that, well, I'll offer Norma an opportunity if you have any final comments before we bring it to a close.
I just would say to students, you are wanted. You are needed. We can't do it without you. We want to build the Federation. There are still so many needs that exist out there for blind people. We're not done with the work that we started in 1940. Mm. And you are a critical piece to that work. So please join us and help us build.
Yeah. And I would offer, just really bringing up what Norma said earlier, if you're expecting us to be perfect in our roles of bringing you into this leadership space, then that's unfortunate. Because, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves to recognize that we're continuing to learn, even as kind of identified leaders in the organization. So please offer us grace in our ability to interact and with you. And then we will offer you our love and support in your effort to be part of this organization. How about you, Melissa?
I mean, I don't think I have anything else to add. I just have really enjoyed this discussion, as always, with all of you, and hope that our listeners are able to get something out of the discussion that will resonate with them.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. I would say let's go build the Federation, but that's off brand for the podcast. So let me just say, remember, you can live the life you want.
Blindness is not what holds you back.
We'd love your feedback. Email podcast@nfb.org or call 410-659-9314, extension 2444.